Thanks for listening to Reasonable Doubt on Podcast One.
Every day in America, 60 million packages are delivered. But we don't always know what's inside.
He bent down to pick the package up. That's when the device detonated.
Danger is everywhere, and no one is safe in Austin, Texas, as law enforcement hunts a serial bomber for 19 days. From Sony Music Entertainment, Campside Media, and Pegalo Pictures, this is Witnessed. 19 Days. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts to binge all episodes or listen weekly wherever you get your podcasts.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Here's an interesting fact for you. There are nearly 1 million new books published in the U.S. alone every year. So if you like to read, how do you choose what you're going to read? Well, that's where Fully Booked by Kirkus Reviews comes in. You see, Kirkus has been one of the top book review publications for over 80 years. They do a deep dive on thousands of titles every year, including interviewing best-selling authors and telling you what might be the hot new release before everyone else knows. And it's coming to Podcast One in just a few weeks. So keep your eyes and ears open for Fully Booked by Kirkus Reviews.
Thanks for listening to Reasonable Doubt on Podcast One. This is Reasonable Doubt with your hosts, Mark Garagus and Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. No choice but to get on, man, to get on. Welcome to the best hour in podcast, best hour in broadcasting, we'll call it. It's Reasonable Doubt. I'm Adam Carolla. It's Mark Garagus over there, everybody. Mark, where are you today?
Adam, I'm in Miami. I had a last-minute client demand that I come here. And, you know, as I was sitting here, I walked back into the hotel to do the Reasonable Doubt best hour of the week. And, you know, this observation just took place. You know, I was – my daughter, Kenny, I was just telling her what my father used to say is that you never have a federal prosecution unless they've got a snitch and a wiretap. And – then as I said that, these three guys just walked by in front of me, and they all three of them looked like they could be federal law enforcement. And it turns out when I did a little bit more investigation here, that it turns out that they're contractors or tradesmen. And so now my question to you is, do you think that there's a relationship between those who go into or an explanation for those who take the right turn and become law enforcement, and those take a left turn and are tradesmen or contractors?
They were all the same dudes on the same high school football team.
I think that's true.
And
so, what makes them to make the one choice over the other?
I've always thought this, and it's never been popular amongst the law enforcement community, but the group of guys that sort of went that route aren't very much different than the guys who went the criminal route in terms of, like, a lot of their DNA. They're guys that are eager for the fray, don't mind a scuffle, don't mind imposing their will on other people. One's a positive, the other's a negative, but their DNA is not that different, you know? There's plenty of people who you know and I know who you'd think, this is an interesting question, Mark Garagus. You ready?
Yeah.
I think I could be a criminal more easily than I could be a cop. And here's...
Oh, I agree.
Here's
I
why...
Agree. I don't think there's any question that I could go criminal before I'd be a cop. Because don't you think... And this would be interesting to see your answer to that. I think because being a cop, is kind of similar for me, at least, to being a judge. I just am not comfortable putting people in jail first and asking questions later.
Well, there's a couple of things I'm not comfortable with. One is, I'll tell you one thing I could never, ever, ever do. pull over a poor person, and you can tell because they've had, you know, they're driving a Honda Civic that's been to the moon and back, and, you know, it's you know, the paint's crazed, and there's a Space Saver spare on there, and walk up and write them a ticket for rolling through a four-way stop sign. And I know the ticket is $289, and I know that's what they take home every 10 days from work. And to know that this is devastating them, and it's probably just going to go to warrant, never get paid or whatever. First thing I couldn't do is go up and impose crazy fines on poor people. And out here in Los Angeles, at least, the poor disproportionately pulled over or have engagement with the cops, even if they're behind the wheel of a vehicle, because, you know, it's more apt that their registration is lapsed or they have a malfunction like a brake light out on their car. You know, everyone is driving around.
Yeah, once again, right. Dad, I'll give you another aphorism. One of my father's favorite aphorisms again is there's more guys in state prison for expired registration or broken taillights than any other offense, because that's the pretext to pull you over, and then it's a full search, and God forbid that you've got this, that, or the other thing sitting in your car. Next thing you know, the car's been impounded. You're being cited. If your license is suspended because you couldn't afford to pay and renew it or something along those lines, and then you're lined up down at Hill Street Courthouse, the Metropolitan Courthouse, waiting in line, killing a whole day to try and clear it up, and then they impose another fine on you, although give credit where credit is due. My buddy, Bob Hertzberg, who's a state senator, I like to affectionately call him Huggy. And in fact, I tease Huggy, why do you always hug? And he says, well, that's one way to find out if somebody's wearing a wire. But Huggy was, part of what he did was put in some and sponsor some legislation that would reduce the bail you have to post so that people at least don't have to stand there in line and pay more bail than they've got in their pocket and things of that nature. But the whole thing is a scam.
Well, we'll finish it off, and then I remember being poor my whole life just meant standing in line. It was a constant. Sometimes it'd be like free spaghetti night at the church, and my mom would take us and we'd stand in line. Or for some reason, when I was poor, it seemed like I was at the DMV, you know, every other month versus now, which I haven't been there in 15 years. I don't know. It's just paying online
or
something.
There's definitely a correlation between your economic status and your visits to the DMV.
Yes, there is.
Unlike you, I've been to the DMV. Yeah, I mean, I won't even go there for a hearing now. I mean, I'll do it by phone because I just don't even want to step in the place. But, God, I remember when I didn't have two nickels that I would be at the DMV, it seems like, I swear, every 6 months.
There's a couple things. When I became, all right, hold on with the DMV, then I'll tell you. As far as a criminal, I don't think I could do anything that involved hurting an individual. I just don't feel, I certainly couldn't put my hands on anybody, but I wouldn't bust anyone's car window. I'm trying to think of what kind of low impact criminal I could be.
We've talked about this, busting car windows. That was once again, my father, who was kind of anti-death penalty, so that was what he reserved the death penalty for, anybody who stole his car radio. But the kinds of crimes, it's interesting because we've had this last week, Neil Gorsuch, the Supreme Court nominee, and his hearings. And I think if you go onto YouTube, you can see a speech he gave to the Federalist Society. And he talks about at length in a pretty compelling speech about how literally there are so many laws on the books, federal laws, that you could commit three federal crimes a day and not even know it. And so, I mean, there are just things that you can't even imagine. You wonder who the heck thought these things up. But I'll pause that for 1 second, Adam, because I got to talk to you about one piece of business. Mm. This is how you avoid going to the DMV. You know how you avoid it?
How?
You go to rich uncles.
Because
you put your money in the bank, you're just going to earn less than 1%, and you're going to be a DMV person. But if you're the bank's landlord, you get over 7%. And, you know, of course, money in the bank is safe. while commercial real estate has risks and isn't guaranteed. But, you know, if commercial real estate goes under, you got bigger problems than that. Rich Uncles, REIT, is a real estate investment trust that pools your money with other investors, rents to creditworthy tenants like Walgreens and Chase. Started by the chairman of the world's largest real estate firm, which I think you met, right, Adam?
Yeah, he was
here. Wealthy investors collect rent and distribute cash to investors each month.
He dresses, by the way, the guy, he dresses like the Monopoly man. He has a huge mustache and a top hat. Yeah, and a pocket watch. That's how you know.
Go to their website and check out Rich Uncles, REIT, a Reg A Tier 2 offering. Go to richuncles.com, richuncles.com. Or actually, if you don't want to do that, just call 855-RICH-UNCLES.
Rich Uncles REIT is seeking indications of interest concerning its Reg A Tier 2 securities offering. Any indication of interest involves no obligation or commitment of any kind. No money or other consideration is being solicited, and if sent, response will not be accepted. No sales will be made or commitments to purchase accepted until the offering statement is qualified. This media outlet is being paid under $2,000 by Rich Uncles for this single message.
I'm curious what your thoughts are on this piece of news, which is, you know, so Trump did this thing where, you know, he said he was being wiretapped, and then he sort of walked that back a little and said, well, by wiretapping, it was a general, like, eavesdropping, meaning not hanging off the eaves of a house, but listening in. And then everyone sort of called him a buffoon. And then the other day, I can't remember which senator came out, or congressman or whatever, but it said it appeared.
Congressman Nunes.
Nunes.
Right?
Yeah. Apparently there was some sort of surveillance going on. He wouldn't say more than that. But he sort of admitted there was something. Now, I don't know. We're living in a world where I've never been this confused. And so it's a weird world we're living in, because it's a world where both sides sort of claim victory simultaneously, which is not something we were used to in the past. In the past, it was, oh, this guy won and this guy lost, or this side's right and that side's wrong. Now we just live in a new world where both fighters hold their arms up at the end of the fight. Doesn't matter what the judges said. And they both dance around and hug their corner and hug their posse. And then you're sitting there in the arena watching going, wait a minute, didn't one of those guys lose? And they both look like they won to me. So happened here?
Let me give you what I think the explanation is. The originally, now that we had FBI Director Comey, who used to be a U.S. attorney and is now the FBI director, he testified this week that, to his knowledge, there was no FISA, which is Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, warrants that were directed at Trump Tower, that there was no search warrants. He went even broader, I think, and specified there were no search warrants that were directed towards Trump or the tower. But then Nunes came out, and so everybody was saying, see, he was wrong and he was crazy, and that, all those things could be true. But and then Trump himself has said, when I said wiretap, I meant it in quotation marks, which means broader, that it could be surveillance. Now, what Nunes says, and this is interesting, he says it was an incidental pickup. Now, the only thing that could potentially mean is, and I don't know if anybody who's listening to has ever had this happen, but you can be picked up on a wiretap that was not directed at you. So if there was a wiretap at some Colombian drug lords that had been executed, and then you're on the phone, or Olga or Marcy are on the phone and they're calling some relative who is in the house where the Colombian drug lord is, that would be picked up and you would be called an incidental communication or interception. And that's, they have to put that down on the register of the wiretap. So what I think is happening here is the Comey has admitted that there's been an investigation for 8 months on the connections between the kind of circle of the people circling Trump and the Russians, and whether or not there was some collusion between the campaign and the Russians in terms of the leaks that WikiLeaks posted during the campaign. Now, if they had, for instance, a wiretap or an intercept on one of the Russians who they thought hacked. And remember, let's connect a couple of stories. There was hackers who were indicted recently in the last 2 weeks, two of whom were Russian, and potentially they could have had for other hacks, whether it was in Google or Yahoo, and Yahoo is the one that everybody talks about. If there was a wiretap for the Russian hackers there, and it turned out that those Russian hackers were also hacking into the same hackers or some of their affiliates or confederates were hacking into the DNC, the Democratic National Committee, and then at some point they're talking to somebody in one of the campaigns, that person on the campaign would not have been the target. And so clearly, when Comey says they were not the target, that's true. Would that person have been picked up as incidental to the Russian hacker? Absolutely. So when Nunes says that was an incidental intercept, that's potentially what they could be referring to, that you weren't the target, but you were picked up on an intercept with somebody who was a target, which is also not necessarily good, because then all you have to do is you go back to the federal judge who authorized the wiretap in the first place and say, well, we came across this incidentally, and it's in, you know, the doctrine under a wiretap is you can't turn your, you don't have to necessarily turn a blind eye to stumbling on other criminal activity, and then you could expand it to make the person who was picked up incidentally become a target of the wiretap.
Is there ever, I mean, I just feel like, is there ever going to be anything from this day forth that doesn't involve incidental or collateral damage when it comes to surveillance? I mean, there's a camera on
investigation.
In our society. I mean, there's a camera on every corner. There's a camera in every ATM. Every cop's got a camera on their dash and on their vest. Every phone is being hacked. Every computer's being hacked. Everybody has a Ring doorbell system that when you press it, it goes to the, you know, you get the person's image on your iPhone when you're at work. I mean, there's a baby cam and a nanny cam. I mean, it's just on. It's impossible. I don't think you're going to be able to walk 3 feet without passing a device.
I think that's absolutely correct. I think now when you talk about having a Lexus or a something in the house, or you talk about the fact that the Samsung TV can be turned into a listening device, or you get hacked into be a listening device. People can hack into a monitor, as you mentioned, a baby monitor. I've had cases where people have hacked into that and have been able to surveil what's going on in a house by virtue of the nanny cam. And so, no, I don't think that. I think virtually anything you do can be picked up in today's day and age.
And again, you know, as you've dealt with these cases, but your phone is your own personal sort of GPS tracking. You know, I grew up, I would watch Mutual of Omaha's Wild Kingdom.
So did I, Sunday night.
And yeah, and every after Disney or before Disney or before McMillan and Wife or whatever
Marlon
it was.
Perkins.
Marlon Perkins. Marlon Perkins is funny because there's this old guy and he's wearing like a safari outfit. And every time there's this sort of running joke, but it's like, I'm up in this tree with my binoculars. Jim's down below. He's going to wrestle the alligator and try to get the homing beacon on him. Like his poor Jim was the guy who was always down there wrestling the water bison while Marlon Perkins was up in the tree. But every second episode of Wild Kingdom was them tagging some animal with a tracking device. But we've all tagged ourselves with our phone, right?
Well, look, I will tell you, I did back in 2004, in order to have a allow, there's a doctrine in the law that's originally was called Daubert, and to have a new scientific method introduced into the law, you have to actually either have an appellate court ruling that says it's scientifically acceptable, or you do a prolonged hearing in a trial court, the superior court in this case in California, and you have experts testify as to whether or not it's accepted in the scientific community. 2004, they wanted to use a GPS device that was and use the phones and the cell towers that were pinging on that your phones use to determine where somebody was. That had never been done before in 2004 to be introduced into evidence. And that was 13 years ago. I did the first hearing on that. It lasted a week and a half. In 13 years, we've gone.
Was that the Scott Peterson? That was the Scott Peterson thing?
Yeah, exactly. We did an extensive hearing on the GPS and the pinging onto the cell phone towers and how that worked and what happened. And I learned more about cell phone towers than I ever wanted to hear. But now I've used it actually to defend people since then, to show where somebody was, and that clearly, unless they'd given their phone to somebody else, that the phone was not where the person could have been. I did that back in 2009. But now it's generally accepted. Law enforcement has got access to that, and you will see that that's one of the first things any good lawyer does and any good prosecutor does, is see where was the phone at the time of the crime.
Are we between DNA and the phone? I'm going to tease this question to you, but between the phone, a surveillance camera, it's literally impossible to go anywhere, to fill up with gas, to go to an ATM, to go to the corner, to wherever. Your neighbor's security camera that's on their front porch is going to see you walking out of your house from the corner of its eye. I'm going to pose this question to you. And like I said, all the DNA microfiber stuff, where the guy's sweatpants had some of the fibers that were used in the interior of Zuzu Imark, and so same fibers were found at the crime scene. I mean, all the invisible stuff, back in the day, it was, oh boy, we got to see if we can get a fingerprint. Oh boy, the guy wore gardening gloves. Well, we're done. And now it's just DNA everywhere and microfibers and cell phones.
They can get the fingerprint off of the inside of the gardening.
Insanity. So what I'm going to tease to you, Mark, is not your garden variety 17-year-old gangbanger drive-by shooting, which there has always been, and there's always been the, pool hall scuffle, somebody gets stabbed. But in terms of, I'm going to kill my wife and collect the insurance, or she's going to kill me and collect the insurance, or I'm going to kill her and take my new lover, or my evil stepdad who molested me, I'm going to do this to him and I'm going to make it look like an accident. You just tell me if it is literally impossible to get away with this stuff anymore, if in the prosecution mounts, a case, because I just feel like I don't know what you could get away with anymore. But hold on a second. And where are we going to be 10 years from now? Like, guy can't kill his spouse? All right. LegalZoom. You want to live in that world? LegalZoom. It's National Small Business Month, and the timing couldn't be better. Approval rates for business loans are up, and so is consumer confidence. So LegalZoom is where you go. LegalZoom.com. They've created a free business startup kit. You go to LegalZoom.com/startup. Do it today and just download it. They have educational ebooks and LegalZoom discounts to save you money on setting up your business. It's never been easier. When stuff gets turnkey like this, it just gets so much cheaper and easier than it is when...
And you and I have talked about this. This is, for me, I've ripped this off from you, this line. This is like the IKEA for lawyers.
Yes.
So it really, and I used it literally within the last 2 weeks.
Well, if you need a custom entertainment unit, go ahead, but that's going to cost you a lot of money. But if you can find it at IKEA, then go get it, and that's what LegalZoom is. It's good stuff at a good price. And, yeah, if you get charged with vehicular manslaughter, maybe go talk to Mark Garagus. But if you're going to start up a business, LegalZoom, man. They've had thousands of LegalZoom partners all over the country. They can help with finance, marketing, operations, no obligation, just great resources. LegalZoom, not a law firm, but they're dedicated to making it easier for business owners. It's LegalZoom. Gary.
Don't put it off any longer. Hurry to LegalZoom.com now and start getting your life in order today. Plus, get special savings when you enter promo code DOUBT at checkout. LegalZoom.com. That's LegalZoom.com.
All right. So,
hey, wait. Before you tease that, but there was one thing that just occurred to me. I mean, it was prodded by that LegalZoom commercial and the fact we were talking about Neil Gorsuch's testimony, which, by the way, I'm a law junkie, and I think we have a lot of law junkies who listen to this. So this has been a fascinating 3 days this week to watch his hearings. And to some degree, they kind of got overshadowed by the Russian testimony and the Russian hearings. But one of the things he talked about was, and it was an article that somebody was using the hammer Gorsuch, and one of the Democratic senators. And interestingly, the article was that some of the ethical rules end up protecting lawyers and not prospective clients. And the example he gave is the unauthorized practice of law and organizations. He didn't mention LegalZoom, but I think he was referring to LegalZoom, how every time LegalZoom goes into a new state where they're providing these services, which, you know, lawyers don't have control over this, or the Bar Association doesn't have control over it, they get sued by the Bar Association. They've got to fight a battle. In fact, we teasingly, I think for weeks, we were talking about which of the two states where LegalZoom isn't there because of these battles they have to wage.
Sorry to cut you off, but it's like Uber, the cab guys have their medallions, they have their monopoly, and then Uber comes in and goes, hey, I want to make it cheaper and better for the people, and guess who wages war against Uber?
Exactly. It's always a turf battle. And it was an interesting thing to hear a guy who, by all accounts, is going to be confirmed and probably be on the Supreme Court for the next 40 years, talking about how are these ethical rules that we are supposedly abide by as lawyers, are those really for our protection as lawyers and our economic protection, or is it for the clients? And he apparently fervently believes, and I can't say I disagree with him, I think he's right. I think it protects lawyers. It certainly doesn't protect the populace.
You know, it's interesting. I was thinking of a compliment for you and possibly for me as well. Last night, so I was thinking of you when you're talking about this. So, you know, when you talk about stuff where you go, hey, this is going to affect lawyers. Hey, this is going to affect this guy or the little guy or that guy. Hey, we can't. And it's that same sort of argument I always have, which is, hey, if we shut down the B-1 bomber plant, there's going to be a lot of people out of work. And you go, well, it's costing billions of dollars to taxpayers, and it's an outdated piece of equipment. Yeah, but these people are going to be out of work. and then you go, well, what are these people? Hey, these are good jobs. Guys are getting $45 an hour and full benefits and overtime and golden time. And they go, all right, well, let them find another job. All they can do is flip burgers at McDonald's. And then you go, well, that doesn't seem like they shepherded their life very well if all they can do is flip burgers at McDonald's if the GM plant closed down or the Northrop Grumman plant closed down. But back to you and my compliment to you. Every time I hear about one of these guys, someone's going to undercut this and they're going to fight against that and the bar is going to try to shut down LegalZoom, I thought, that never affects Mark Garagus. And the reason it doesn't affect Mark Garagus is because you're really good, you're talented, you're motivated, and you've built a career that transcends that. And you don't have to worry about which way the wind is blowing, whether LegalZoom comes in and does the chicken shit paperwork that it's going to take to start a small business or not, because that's not your business. You've gone beyond that.
It's so funny you say that, because one of the biggest battles you wage with young lawyers is trying to explain to them, learn the craft, and you will never have to worry. I mean, the idea that, no, I've got to have X amount of dollars. I've got to go work. It's kind of that brass ring, big firm thing that they inculcate in you in law school, that you've got, first of all, you take on an ungodly amount of debt, and then you got to pay the debt off. So you got to worry about that. And I understand that it's a nightmare, but the fact is, if you learn your craft, if you learn what it is you want to do and you make yourself the expert, you just become proficient to a degree where somebody is always going to want you. That is infinitely more valuable. Then nothing else matters. You know, it's that Warren Buffett thing. You've created a moat around yourself so that you can't be put out of business.
I was standing last night with Sonny, 10-year-old boy, and he's interested in everything. Natalia wants to go to work for Uncle Mark's law firm, but
right. But Natalia will be. What do we got about? She's got about 14 years, and then she's coming in. She and Tenny will put me out to pasture.
Yeah, she'll put everyone out to pasture. But she's a dynamo. But Sonny wants to be a sports broadcaster, do a podcast, whatever. But, you know, we're talking last night, and I was talking to her, Lynette, and I was talking to Sonny. And we were talking about, she's Gavin Newsom. He's probably going to be the governor of California. And then we're laughing about me tearing him a new asshole when he was in here. And I said to Lena, you know, it's so crazy because the next day after Gavin Newsom came in here and was talking about shutting down check cashing places, the headline at HuffPo was Adam Carolla wants to know what's wrong with black people and Hispanics, which is an insane headline because I didn't bring up black people.
It was not exactly the takeaway. Was
not
it?
Exactly what happened, but that's the headline at HuffPo in bold print. And Sonny said, do people think you're a racist? And I said, yeah, some people do. I said, they don't really believe it. They say it over and over again, but they don't actually believe it, but they still like to say it. And he said, so how's that affect things? And I said, hey, Sonny, if you're really good, nothing affects you. So if you're
right.
If you're marginal, then you get jobs taken away from you, or you get suspended, or you get whatever. If you kick ass at what you do, if you do something that other people can't do, then you say whatever the fuck you want and you do whatever you want to do because no one can take it away from you. And that's the takeaway with everything in life. If you're going to work at the GM plant and you're going to get $37 an hour for something that a guy in Mexico will do for $7 an hour, it can be taken away from you. If you're a lawyer and you're lower tier and you're working in the margins and you're doing all this shit, then LegalZoom can come in and ruin your life
and
take away
and
stuff.
Your lunch. Right.
Right. They can eat your lunch. They can eat your lunch. And if you're if you're 52 years old and you're driving a hack to LAX back and forth every day, then Uber can come in and eat your lunch. But if you're Mark Garagus, there's really nothing they can do. And that's the whole point. Be that, and they can't take it away from you.
The interesting thing, though, is...
And I'm sorry, it's not be rich. It's be really good at what you do.
I couldn't agree more, because then you don't have to worry about that. I mean, it comes. I mean, it takes... You know, I think it's Malcolm Gladwell who talks about the 10,000-hour principle, where you got to practice something for 10,000 hours. And I've always thought that that's not even accurate, because, you know, 10,000 hours, if you're looking at it, is 4 years of doing something. I bet you, Adam, if I were to ask you, aren't there things in carpentry that take a lot more than 4 years of practice to get down? I mean, I was just when I was in Rhode Island, I was at a place where they had turned a woodworking shop, and they had this master woodworker carpenter who was in there with just this incredible setup at the Balcourt Castle up there that's owned by the Carolyn Rafelian. And this guy, who's probably been doing this stuff for, I don't know, 35 years, just this intricate, unbelievable woodworking, I think that takes more than 4 years to hone that skill.
It's funny, I always... Whenever our friend Dr. Drew, years ago when we do Loveline, at some point we'd always have these two good arguments. One is I would explain to him why I should get paid more than him, and he would say why, and I'd say because I do all the talking and I do everything on this show, and we go favored nations. We split it down the middle. In which case, he'd always go, "I'm a doctor. I'm a physician. You don't think I deserve to get paid as much as you?" And then I'd always pause and I'd go, "Who gets paid more, you or Jerry Seinfeld?" And then he would shut the fuck up immediately. That's number one. Number two, he would get highfalutin and on his high horse with me and go, "It took 8 years of college of training to do what I do, or 10 years of college training." I said, you know, to be a journeyman carpenter, Drew, you need at least 10 years. You're not going to learn.
Right.
You look, you could just focus on sheetrocking and tin knocking. You could just do metal stud and just work for an outfit that just hung drywall all day. And in a year, you'd be pretty good at hanging drywall. But you're not going to be able to hang drywall, finish drywall, and then do stair stringers, you know, treads and risers, and then form concrete and do kitchen cabinets and do laminate work and do tile backsplashes. You're not going to learn the full scope and scale of everything that goes on in that house. You might learn how to form concrete, but that same guy, if he wants to learn how to do finish work and swing a white oak door with natural finish, that's 10 years.
Well, you're not kidding. And guess what? Once you get to that point, you can write your own ticket.
I mean, there's no
there, to find somebody
there
who
is,
does that stuff.
I
literally watched these guys working and know that they had to scour all of New England to find the guys who had the skill set to be able to do this. And they had to pay them enormous amounts of money.
Well, here's me point. I've said this a million times. No matter what the economy's like, if you are a good, skilled carpenter, and the caveat is honest as well, not a junkie. If you're a good, skilled carpenter, you will never be out of work, ever. And I tell people that all the time. And they're like, yeah, but what if the economy takes a turn? It does not matter. You will always be at work. And
in fact, you're more in demand than a world famous oncologist
because
bizarre ways.
Well, you are in the sense that, you know, everybody doesn't have cancer, but everyone lives in a house. So
And there's always, no matter what happens with the economy, there's always somebody. You remember the stock market tanks, the greatest fortunes in the world have been made by the guys who were short selling on the other side of the stock market tanking. And what do you think they're doing with their money? You know, take a look at the Big Short and what happened as recently as 2008 when the stock market imploded. $1 billion fortunes were made, and those guys are spending money, and they're hiring the highest of skill sets to build zillion-dollar houses.
Well, that's the thing. So on a much smaller scale, when I was a carpenter, I never advertised. I never asked anybody for referrals. I never did anything. It was just all I did was work, and it was all word of mouth. And I never, it was a weird thing because I never knew what I was doing the next week. I just knew the phone would ring and I'd have somewhere else to go. It was funny. I was talking to the Spike people today and they were saying, there's a couple ladies who might want to come on the show. Can you, what do you think? And they're running through some of the names. And one of them was Aisha Tyler, who I like. And I said, yeah, she'd be great. And then the next one was Katie Segal from Married with Children. So would you like her to come on your live Build It Home Improvement show? And I said, yes, I would, because I used to go to her house when she lived up in the hills of Hollywood, and I would work on her house. I built her garage cabinets. I put a sauna in.
So good.
I built
that
her house.
So good.
And by the way, from her, I got plenty of other work, because what it is she had like a celebrity assistant, and that celebrity assistant was in like the network of celebrity assistants. And so, of course, when like Scott Baio's celebrity assistant needed somebody who was trustworthy and skilled to come and do work on Scott's house, then the celebrity assistant called her and they called me. So that's how it worked. But I don't feel like I've never seen any billboards with your name on it. Is every single thing just word of mouth?
It's just great. You tease that. I'm going to talk about one thing first. Tommy John.
Oh,
remember Tommy John?
Wearing them now.
Yeah. Okay.
Let's see.
Do you think anyone sees you when you're lunging for lug space or plucking your wedgie? I do. So it's time for an underwear.
Me and Gary right now. Yep.
Yeah, Gary's doing it. Tommy John's second skin, made from super soft natural fiber, sourced from beechwood trees, puts regular cotton to shame. I know, because I'm wearing it right now. Quick draw fly, which is important for smooth deployment. More than 5,000 five-star reviews, 2 million pairs sold, all backed by the best pair you'll ever wear, or it's free guarantee. Tommy John, no adjustment needed. Right, Gary?
Oh, there he
is. That is right. Check out Tommy John's complete lineup of unbelievable underwear, undershirts, socks, and more at TommyJohn.com now. Plus, save 20% on your first order with code Adam. That's Adam for 20% off only at TommyJohn's.com. TommyJohn's.com.
So being a lawyer...
You know, there's something, Adam, because we were teasing it, that's another thing you get on the high horse to talk about as well. You know, the thing about honing your craft, no matter what it is, that then people, you know, the old expression, people are going to see what you do, and soon enough, you know, I love it when guys talk about marketing, they talk about branding, and they talk about this. Yeah, that's great. Why don't you make your brand to be the best frickin', you know, whatever it is, X, Y, Z, that you can be. In my case, it's, you know, I tell the younger lawyers, if you want to do nothing but criminal, then be the best goddamn criminal defense lawyer. And that means know every case, know where the law's headed, and anticipate it. If you're going to do civil work or 1983 civil rights work in federal, then go try federal cases. So I've got Gamma, who's in the office. I plucked him out of the DA's office, and he's already tried two federal civil rights cases. Guys who've been practicing law for 40 years have never tried two civil rights cases in federal court to a jury. He's tried two in less than a year and got punitive damages against cops in both cases. And the only way to do it is when you hone your craft, you learn, and you do it. And I would imagine, because every time I'm trying to find a journeyman carpenter or a skilled carpenter or a finished carpenter, it's the same thing. I mean, they're in demand. They're always in demand. I don't care what the economy's doing.
Well, I don't look at that as any different than you. There's thousands and hundreds of thousands of lawyers, and there's hundreds of thousands of guys who put wood together, but there's a handful of guys who do it better, and word gets around, and it's always a little bit, I find it off-putting a little bit when people want to try to figure out a way around the system of early, often, consistent, and just let the word naturally trickle out. When I got started in comedy, you know, people were like, you know, you need headshots, you need a lawyer, you need a manager, you need a resume. Right. And I was like, I need to learn what I'm doing first. I remember like thinking
right.
myself,
I need to be funny and I need to entertain an audience.
I need to go do open mics and stand in line. I need to go take classes at the Groundlings and Acme Theater and anywhere else that'll have me, that'll take my money. And I never went out on auditions because I was like, why are you auditioning? You have no skill set. You don't know what you're doing. So what if, God forbid, you got the job? Then you wouldn't know how to execute the job. And I feel like everyone now is trying to figure out how to get the casting agent to give them the nod when they should be figuring out how to get really good at what they do, and then their phone will never stop ringing.
Well, and it translates. I can continue the conversation right in the law. If you want to be a trial lawyer, you don't. You know, going out and marketing yourself or putting up a great website doesn't make you a trial lawyer. The only way you become a trial lawyer is you say, you know, the defense is ready or the plaintiff is ready, Your Honor. We're ready to put 12 in the box. Let's rack a jury. And you try a case, and you're not going to win every single case. I mean, nobody who actually tries cases will win every single case, but you'll learn more from the cases you don't win than you do literally from the cases that you do. So the only way to do it is to try cases. And for you, whether it was comedy, the only way to learn or hone your skill set is to get up on an open mic and do it, or get out in the get onto a live situation and test yourself and learn from your failures and do it.
Well,
otherwise, you're never going to get anywhere.
One of the things I knew, and it's a very interesting thing, which is I somehow knew, we started today by talking about spending time at the DMV. The longest time I ever spent at the DMV was to be certified to be a comedy traffic school teacher. Because they don't just let you be, they don't let you just teach traffic school. You have to be sort of like an arm of the DMV. You have to be, you know, certified.
Yeah, yeah,
licensed.
Because you're certifying that moving violations will no longer be moving violations.
Right. And I had a whole bunch of, you know, fancy slips and triplicate that I would have to fill for every person and then turn them in so that the courts knew that this person had this removed from their record or they didn't get the points or whatever it was. And back then it was so they didn't have to pay the fine either. Surprise, surprise. Somebody figured out, wait a minute, why don't they pay the fine and pay to go to traffic school? That's
right.
By the way, if you want to know how government works, here's how government works. Government works with starts off with like pretty good intentions, which is sort of like, hey, if somebody gets a moving violation and let's just say they can't afford it, they were one of the aforementioned people we talked about at the beginning of the show, like I was and many other people. I used to go to traffic school when I was poor because the ticket, which was, let's just say, would be $100 or $89 back in the day, was more than a Saturday afternoon was worth to me.
Right.
So
right. You could not out earn it.
No, I was making $6-7 an hour. So, you know, 7-8 hours sitting at a traffic school in Reseda at the Sears traffic school for $19, I would save $65 over the price of the ticket, you know.
Right.
So
yeah, you were ahead of the game.
I used to use it not to get points off the license, but as a money saving. So the government starts off by going, hey, let's create a modality where people who don't have money, who do get pulled over, can go sort of work it off this way at traffic school and not have to. So you can pay the fine and not go to traffic school, or you can go to traffic school and not pay the fine. That lasted a little while, and now they figured out, you know what, not only should you pay the fine in full, but you need to pay the courts to go to traffic school, and then you need to pay the traffic school as well.
Exactly, which is always, unfortunately, as you said, it always starts off, the road to hell is lined with good intentions.
Right. So I went to the DMV, and I had to complete a test that was about 300 questions long, and I had like 3 hours to complete it. I remember.
Well, was it traffic related?
This was, in order to teach traffic school,
right,
you had to know every, yes,
traffic,
every,
you
yes,
know all the vehicle code stuff?
Every ordinance you needed to somehow be up on.
What is the speed limit in a school zone?
Let's see. Let me try to.
35 or 45?
Well, it depends because it has to be when school's in session. Like, it has to be during those hours.
Very good. Look at you. You got it.
Can't be on a Saturday unless it's a yeshiva or whatever. So, I remember sitting back there. And look, all I did was try to memorize as much shit as I could and then regurgitate it and never think about it again. Because once I got into the classroom, I did almost no technical stuff at all that had to do with traffic. It was all just free form improv that was all for comedy. But I knew instinctively after spending my 3 hours, by the way, in the back room of the DMV, I was not in the general pop. You got to go in the back and like sit down. And
I'm not an open book.
No. And I knew instinctively that if I did traffic school and I stood up there for 7 hours, literally, I mean, there's a lunch break and there's a couple of 10-minute breaks spread in over that 8-hour Saturday or 4 hours and 4 hours on a Wednesday night and a Friday night, whatever it is. I just knew if I could stand there for hours upon hours and improvise that doing stand-up or a live TV show or going and playing a college or whatever it was, I knew it would be relatively easy compared to imagine standing there for 8 hours trying to do comedy.
Trying to make the vehicle code sound interesting.
Right.
Keeping people's attention, right?
Right. But it was another one of those things that was all part of the training, never really fully compensated for, and not an enjoyable period, but a necessary period that I think a lot of young people attempt to avoid. But you can't avoid it because that's your 10,000 hours.
Right. It's exactly right. And the 10,000 hours, I just am convinced as a low estimate or a low floor on what you really need, because I don't care. I've been doing my craft for almost 35 years, and I still think that I can learn stuff virtually every single day.
I have
an associate who just gave a talk down in Miami, where I am now, Tina, and she did it with Effley Bailey. Now, Effley has got to be in his 80s, and still sharp as a tack. And for those who don't remember, he was on O.J.'s defense team, but before that he did Patty Hearst, and before that, originally, he did the original Sam Shepard case. He did the appeal when he was 29 or 30, I think, back in the 50s, and got that reversed by the U.S. Supreme Court.
That's the Army doctor. Was that the Army doctor, Sam Shepard?
Yeah.
That was accused of killing his wife.
Became the fugitive, exactly.
Became the fugitive,
Effley Bailey will lecture to accomplished lawyers that he still reads voraciously right now, because you can't go into a courtroom without knowing as much as you can. I mean, people, you know, the idea that you've got to focus on the law or you've got to focus on this. No, you've got to be able to connect the dots. You've got to be able to relate to all kinds of, across all kinds of fields or disciplines. And he lectures on that and still reads voraciously. Unfortunately for Lee, he can't get himself admitted again. And he's been disbarred in Florida. And although he passed the bar in Maine, they won't allow him to practice. I think they ought to before he passes on from the
court. Well,
there was probably no better cross-examiner.
I'm going to tease that. I want to know why he's not. I also want to say quickly, whether it's the law or carpentry, there's always so much new stuff, so much new technology, so much new stuff that didn't exist 25 years ago, that of course you have to keep learning, because stuff just didn't, you know, you're talking about the cell phone stuff. He didn't have to deal with the cell phone stuff when he's dealing with Sam Shepard. It wasn't invented. All right, hold on. I want to know why he's not able to practice law. First, I'll tell you about Ting. Save tons on your cell bill. Oh, speaking of cell phones, Ting Mobile.
Right, I'm doing it right now.
Yeah, man. They can triangulate you twice. The new service, it's two nationwide networks, T-Mobile and Sprint. You can have them both. And you pay for what you use. Not what you think you're going to use. Pay for what you use. No set plans. Yep. Use less, pay less. No overage charges, penalties, or contracts. It's that simple. They got a no-hold customer service. You can speak with a real person immediately. Never be put on hold. First mobile service provider to allow you to have devices on two different networks under the same account. That's what we like. So stuck in a contract? They'll give you credit if you're paying to come to Ting, so they can help you out of that contract. Look, they want to get you out of that. They want to get you over to Ting. They want you to start saving money now. So visit Ting at Doubt. Ting at doubt.ting.com. Our listeners save $25 off select devices or receive a $25 certificate in service credit. So you can get the $25 in credit, or you get the select devices and you save $25 off select devices. Doubt.ting.com. So Effley Bailey is not allowed to practice law?
Is not allowed to practice law. You know, two of the most famous lawyers in the country are both not allowed to practice law. The other one, besides Effley Bailey, is Bill Clinton. Bill Clinton, out of the whole Paula Jones and Whitewater investigation, was disbarred and not allowed to practice law. Effley Bailey came about. Actually, I had a tangential relationship to the case. There was a guy who was extradited from Hong Kong. I represented him when they brought him to L.A., and then when he left L.A., they took him to Florida where they had an indictment. So this guy gives Lee for his fee, he gave him some stock in a company. And the stock, I forget, was worth X amount of dollars. Call it $500,000 when he gave it to Lee.
How long ago was
this? So Lee goes and represents this guy, and a year later, the guy gets convicted, and the government wants to claw back the defendant's assets. And one of the assets is the $500,000 stock that they gave to Lee Bailey.
What year is this, Mark?
I'm going to say 96, 97.
Wow, so it's been a while.
After OJ.
Okay.
But it was a long saga. So the problem was that the client gave the stock to Lee, and it was worth don't quote me on this, X amount of dollars. I'm just going to say $500,000 for illustration. And by the time the government tried to claw the stock back, the stock was worth $2.5 million. So there was a $2 million profit delta. And Lee says, I'll give you back, basically, I'll give you back the $500,000, but I'm not giving you the $2 million in profit. You didn't do anything. I held on. I could have sold the stock back then and cashed out the half. You only would have had a claim to the $500,000. They literally got some judge to issue a contempt against Lee, and they put him in custody as to whether or not he was going to divest himself of the stock. And then one thing led to another, and he got disbarred in Florida. And then I think at the time he was also licensed in a state in New England, I want to say Massachusetts. So they, there was a sister state reciprocal disbarment there, and he hasn't practiced for, it's got to be 10 or 12 years. What he did in the interim, and I think it was Maine, is he took the Maine bar exam, passed, but the character committee or character advisement, would not admit him, so he still does not practice, which I think is criminal, absolutely criminal.
Well, a couple
okay, he wouldn't give the government more money that arguably they didn't deserve.
Well, it's been a theme for a couple of our shows, which is, you know, I live out here in Hollywood, and I'm surrounded by people that never stop worrying about big business. You know, then it's like, oh, what's the corporate man going to do? And it's like, oh, you should worry more about the government than what the man, you know, the guy who runs Nabisco is not going to do anything to you. The government gets to basically do what they want, and they get to basically do what they want with impunity. And that's that's scary. And I'm not one of these, you know, guys who was worried about, you know, black helicopters and jackbooted thugs and taking away my weapons and my right and my whatever. I'm not that guy at all. I'm just saying, each time the government grows and the people shrink just a little bit, and here in California, we cheer that. We want more of it. And I'm like, I really? You want more of that? Because you don't know what they can do when they're you know, when they go unchecked, unfettered this way. And
Well, you know, the number of people who, you know, there was a number of people after our last discussion when I was railing about the way that I thought Lee Baca got treated. And I think a lot of, or maybe some people, I don't know that a lot, kind of missed the point. My point wasn't that somebody shouldn't get punished for, you know, allowing abusive behavior to go on in county jail. I'm the first guy to, I'm right in the front of that line to hold somebody accountable. What I was talking about is, look what they did to the guy who was a well-regarded former sheriff of L.A. County for over a decade, who was enlightened and literally did a lot of good work. And they crushed this guy. And my point was, if they could crush somebody like him who had the resources and the ability to fight, imagine what happens to somebody who doesn't. That's the point. It isn't that, you know, you can't hold somebody accountable. It's just at some point, you know, when do you say enough is enough?
I got a quick question I'm going to tease. Don't answer, because I want to talk about MedJet Assist. But tell me how much of this F. Lee Bailey feels like payback for O.J.? And I know O.J. already got payback for O.J. because he got charged with kidnapping, and he was just standing in someone else's hotel room, not even his. It was in the guy's hotel room, and he got charged for kidnapping. That's payback in my book. But I want to know how much, you know, character stuff, and you talk about being disbarred. I want to know about how much of that you feel would have happened if he had no connection whatsoever with the O.J. case, or even if he was on the other side of it with Darden and Marsha Clark. First, I'll tell you about MedJet Assist, man. Basic safety nets like platinum credit cards or travel insurance typically don't cover you if you're injured or traveling someplace unsafe. MedJet Assist, world's most comprehensive membership available for health, safety, and security when you travel. So if you're guy of some means like Mark Garrigus over here, and you do a lot of traveling, you do owe it to your loved ones to be responsible, to be safe. and to
and by the way, it's infinitely cheaper than what you pay yearly for the membership fee for an Amex card, which gives you less coverage than this thing.
Now, I'll tell you what my black Amex card gets me. I hold it up at the captain's lounge every time I go into LAX, and they go, "Yeah." And I go, does this get me in? No.
Exactly. Every time they say I want the annual fee again, I said, I can't get into a goddamn airport lounge. Why am I paying the annual fee? What's the good of the black card?
And then I go, this one. I got a first class ticket to New York. Sir, it's only international. And then I always go, well, wait a minute. If I'm flying from New York to Paris, it's the same flight as flying from L.A. to New York. So why, sir? Lower your voice. Perhaps you'd be more comfortable in the Chili's downstairs, sir. So you can avoid costly fees and the fine print restrictions on medical care, crisis response, protects you 150 miles or more from home. So you don't have to get that far from home, including domestic, international travel. MedJet Horizon memberships also include travel security, crisis response for political threats, hijacking, wrongful detention, disappearance. It's all there. So pack peace of mind for your next trip. It's MedJet Assist. Gary.
Right now, MedJet is offering our listeners a special deal. Receive up to $50 off an annual membership when you go to MedJet.com/impact and enter code DOUBT. Annual memberships start at $270, and you can save up to $50. That's MedJet.com/impact and enter promo code DOUBT.
So, F. Lee Bailey, how much do you think his association with the O.J. trial colored this episode?
Well, you know, he and Johnny were the face of that defense. And, you know, everybody knows that Johnny, after that, I think the only other criminal trial he ever did was the one he tried with Ben Brofman in New York, which was Puffy's trial on the gun case. And then died on, you know, way too young. F. Lee then gets disbarred. Robert Kardashian dies. Carl Douglas is still around. Sean Hawley is still around. Barry Scheck and Peter Neufeld are still around. But there is some, in these high profile cases, you often see that the lawyers end up getting, something happens afterwards. I mean, Jodi Arias is another one. Both that Juan Gonzalez in Arizona, who was the prosecutor, he ended up getting disciplined. And I think the defense lawyer actually got suspended from the practice of law, both of which because they both wrote books and then people come and they give it payback. And there is a great deal. Part of the problem in a lot of these cases when they're high profile, especially criminal defense, doesn't happen as much in civil. But criminal defense, people tend to associate the lawyer with the client and then taint the lawyer. And, well, you're defending a murderer. That means you endorse murder God forbid you defend somebody who's universally despised, then, you know, that becomes kind of the your calling card for until the next client you have. And the public tends to jump on that bandwagon, which is unfortunate, I think. And then, unfortunately, bar associations and the authorities sometimes get carried away because, you know, who doesn't want to be a hero? And, you know, nothing better than to put O.J.'s lawyer out of business, you know, just like he gave O.J. payback for.
Yeah. So, I think just to wrap it up before we say good day, it's impossible to really quantify. You can't go yes or no. But I think you can say, because you're dealing with human beings and human beings have emotions and feelings, that if you get on the wrong side of a case like this, it is going to affect you negatively. Now, is it going to be a ton of negativity, a little negativity? Is it just enough to sway it the other direction? We'll never really know. But I think sort of right-thinking people, when you hear about like F. Lee Bailey and you hear the nuts and bolts of him being disbarred, you think, if he didn't have that O.J. baggage, he may have just got a slap on the hand and being able to return to his practice. People should know that Mark and I are going to be doing a live Reasonable Doubt town hall, and that'll be We'll give you the details in a later date, but it'll be July 20th, and you can get tickets. That'll be Thursday, July 20th. You get tickets at adamcarolla.com. It'll be Mark and I up on stage together doing a live town hall. We're working on a venue right now, but just go. It'll be in L.A. Is that?
No, it's at 10 E.
It'll be in downtown at 10 E. L.A. because we're going to.
Oh.
I think that's going to be the subject
of
our
in downtown. Okay. Sorry, I was looking. There's a whole bunch of stuff on there that just there's a bunch of letters and numbers, but it doesn't look like.
We'll adjust that. It's going to be at Mark's Restaurant 10 E. And
yeah, I got
have
it.
Audience participation, so you can, you know, ask us questions and stuff like that.
That's
so.
Me. It usually says Wilbur Theater or something on there. It says 10 E in DTLA. So I was like, to be determined or that. The last time we didn't have a venue. All right, we'll do it at 10 E. So you guys can come out and have some tapas as well. No Safe Spaces. Me and Dennis Prager debuted at number 5 on the Billboard charts, by the way. So that's available.
No kidding.
Yeah, on iTunes. People love me and Dennis together. He's a neighborhood guy. That's on iTunes, Amazon, AdamCarolla.com. It's just $4.99. It's about 100 minutes of me and Dennis giving you a little wisdom out there from Cal State Northridge. So go to AdamCarolla.com if you want to find out about the Spike Show, being in the audience, questions, whatever it is. And Carolla Drinks, say hi to Lynette. Get $10 off your entire order, or 10% off your entire order. You buy 3 bottles and get $10. And flat shipping as well. Just go to Carolla Drinks, say hi to Lynette. Mark, plugs?
I've got the Palm Springs coming up. Coachella's coming up. We've got a couple of rooms left. Booked now. Casa Tropicana in San Clemente, beautiful little boutique hotel. And we've also got the Capri in Southampton in the Hamptons, booked now because we open up at the end of May.
Gary?
Yeah, to get that Carolla Drinks deal, use the code SEXPO. There's a little nod to Adam Carolla and Friends Build Stuff Live. So go do that at CarollaDrinks.com, and thanks for listening.
So until next time, Adam Carolla for Mark Garagus saying mahalo.
Thanks for listening to Reasonable Doubt. Tune in next Saturday for an all-new episode. This is Carolla Digital.
You know that's the sound of another sale on your online Shopify store. But did you know Shopify powers selling in person, too? That's right. Shopify is the sound of selling everywhere. Online, in-store, on social media, and beyond. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in-line and online. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/truecrime.
Hi, I'm Cyndi Lauper. My scalp was covered with psoriasis, which could lead to psoriatic arthritis. But Cosentyx treats both.
Cosentyx secukinumab is prescribed for adults with moderate to severe plaque psoriasis 300 milligram dose and adults with active psoriatic arthritis 150 milligram dose. Don't use if you're allergic to Cosentyx. Before starting, get checked for TB. Serious allergic reactions, severe skin reactions that look like eczema, and an increased risk of infections, some fatal, have occurred. Cosentyx may lower ability to fight infections, so tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms like fevers, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough, had a vaccine or plan to, or if IBD symptoms develop or worsen. Learn more at Cosentyx.com or 1-844-COSENTYX.
Cosentyx works for me.
Ask your doctor about Cosentyx.